So it's been a full week for some of us. With the weather changing as it is, it's going to impact a lot of people's health. And for some reason, I haven't been able to sleep as well as I'd like to the last little while. So if my voice gives out, then you can blame one of those options. I'm going to continue on with the wrestling image, this wrestling series that I started last week. This may be come as a surprise to some of you. At my high school in Ontario, we had a physical education gym for grades 9 and 10, and it was mandatory in grade 9, optional in grade 10, and optional after that, but they had wrestling in grades 9 and 10. And you might not think it to look at me, but I was quite the wrestler. I was in the smallest weight class. I was a late bloomer. I have no shame about that anymore. But I was in the smallest weight class, and we would take for a few days. We would learn holds. We would learn stretching. We would learn the technique. And then for a few weeks, we would wrestle. And the odds were pretty good. You would get to wrestle in a particular class, and you would wrestle someone in your weight category. And then at the end, we would know who was the champion. And both times, both years, I won my weight class. I never lost a wrestling match in my weight class, and just said, thank you. But we didn't have a school wrestling team until I was in grade 11, and we weren't wrestling in Suzette anymore, and I was getting into more academic extracurricular activities, and so I didn't get into wrestling. It's one of my regrets. One of the things that I wish had happened differently. Had there been a wrestling team in grade 9, then probably after I easily defeated all of my opponents, who were also late bloomers, and I would have probably been tapped on the shoulder by my coach, who would have said, we've got a team, you should try out for this. Now, I don't know how many of you have watched wrestling on TV. You might not want to admit to it, I understand. But there's wrestling, that's wrestling entertainment, and this would probably be on Monday evenings, or Saturday mornings. It used to be on when I would watch with my brother. And this is sort of theatrical. And they wear theatrical costumes, sometimes special masks, and they have characters and storylines. But in Olympic wrestling, Greco-Roman wrestling, they have what's called a singlet. So it's sort of a tight uniform, and it doesn't really make room for sort of grabbing clothing in the wrestling, and it just keeps everything tight. And I never got to wear a singlet. We just wrestled in our gym clothes. And so I was looking around, and in my research for the sermon series, I found a singlet. This is, I don't know who these people are, but it's some Christian designers designed a singlet. So for $75, you can get one of these singlets, and it would be a great Christmas present. Sorry, I don't know if you now have a mental image, and I apologize for that. But if you look closely at this, you can see religious images, right? There's a cross on one side, and there's a dove on the other side, very clear stained glass image type stuff drawn there. And yet, if you look on one of the legs, maybe you can't quite see it all, but I'll zoom in a little bit. There's this, 1313. It doesn't say, but it seems as though this must be a scripture reference. It doesn't say the book, just the chapter and the verse. And so I was kind of scrolling through my memory, trying to think which memorable, which key profound Bible verses are there with this passage that would somehow tie into this wrestling series that I can kind of get an understanding of it. And so I kind of started flipping through because I couldn't think of any. And there were a few that might sort of be menacing enough or intimidating that might kind of fit with a wrestling image. This one connects to the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, maybe not quite fitting for the wrestling arena in Genesis. If we go to the next sort of sounds like what a WWE wrestler might even say, but still doesn't quite seem to fit within the sermon series that I was working on, so I'll keep going. In Mark, Jesus warns that everyone will hate you because of me. And if you stand firm until the end, you will be saved. So this kind of has carry over into wrestling. Right? If you're on the right wrestling team, there will be a reward in the end. Still not entirely fitting. Also, this one sort of authoritative, which is sort of the image you want in wrestling intimidating, but still not quite. There is one, though. There is a passage, maybe some of you have thought about this one, at chapter 13, verse 13. I suspect some of you have attended a wedding, maybe even your own wedding, where this verse was read. 1 Corinthians 13. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. So how does this fit with 1 Corinthians chapter 13? How does this fit with the most famous chapter on love in the Bible? Now, to draw the connection, I want you to imagine that you were at one of our church events, let's say last week at the Cornwall, or even next week at the church retreat, both of which we hold up as big events in our schedule. Imagine you, let's say you come around the building here, or you walk down the path at Camp Alacqua, and you find two people wrestling. Now, depending on the stage of life or your connection to one of these people, you may feel like you need to intervene. Now, I'm sure you can imagine a number of scenarios where you would let them be. Two little boys, that's fine. Father and son, maybe if they've got it figured out, probably the son thinks he's stronger than he is. Probably the father thinks his back is more stable than it is. But you would let it go, right? But when would you intervene? Well, if you found two people wrestling and one person didn't want to be wrestling, you would intervene. And you would help that person escape from whatever the wrestling hold they were in and they didn't want to be there. Or if there was an obvious power imbalance and it looked like some form of injury was imminent, you would intervene. Right, this is fairly obvious. I'm going to present it as a possibility to you. Let's say you found a young man and a young woman wrestling. They were both happily there, and nobody was asking to be removed. You would intervene. Not because somebody wasn't enjoying it, but because one or both of them might be enjoying it a little bit too much. Right? Wrestling is a surprisingly intimate encounter. And so, I don't know if this is what the designers of this sibling had in mind, but there is something intimate about this exchange of wit, this exchange of physical strength, this challenge between two people. There's a closeness, not just physical closeness, but there's a closeness in a relationship. So if we go back to the story from Genesis chapter 32 of Jacob wrestling. This is Jacob calls this place Peniel because he has seen God face to face. And so if we look at the story of Jacob, what has Jacob already gone through? Laura led us through a few of those stories. Jacob has received a blessing from God. Jacob has received an inheritance from his father. Part of that is the inheritance, a spiritual inheritance from God. Jacob had to flee for his life and felt that he had received some sort of divine protection. And then Jacob has this dream where he sees a ladder coming to and from heaven. And then Jacob finds shelter at the home of his father-in-law. Jacob finds love. Jacob is given 11 sons. Jacob is given incredible success in the agricultural pursuits that he takes on. And in all of those things, Jacob has not seen God face to face. In all of those successes, in all of those blessings, Jacob has not seen God face to face. But here, in a wrestling match where his leg is rather joint, where he'll walk with a limp for the rest of his life, he's unable to win entirely the wrestling match the way that he wants. And here, he sees God face to face. This phrase, face to face, comes up a few other times in the Bible, and it comes up in ways that I think draws attention to this relationship that Jacob is pointing to. So, where else do we see this? Well, another passage is in the book of Ezekiel. This, I won't spend as much time in the major prophets as other pastors, so I'm guessing you might not as well. But here is a part of a longer story of the people of Israel. They're living in exile, and they're crying out to God. And it carries a lot of similarities to the story of Moses and the people of Israel in Egypt. And so, God is speaking through Ezekiel, and he explains that I will bring you out into the wilderness of the nations, and there, face to face, I will execute judgment upon you. Now, this sounds menacing. This isn't the kind of intimate face to face that Jacob is talking about, or that we read about in other places. This is a place of punishment and judgment. But this is the same, as we keep reading in verse 36, as I judged your ancestors in the wilderness. What was the judgment the ancestors got in the wilderness? Well, this was directly connected to the freedom they experienced in the wilderness. And so the judgment came when they weren't fully appreciating the freedom that they had been given. And freedom was coming to the people of Israel at this time as well. One of the legacies that Moses has is that he was one of the few prophets, one of the few biblical figures who saw God face to face. This three-word phrase in the Bible is written about Moses more than anybody else, because he spoke to God face to face in the mountain when he got the Ten Commandments, in the tent of meeting. God spoke to Moses face to face. And there was a time when, because Moses had been so close to God, because they were face to face for so long, Moses' face was radiant, and other people couldn't be with him. Other people couldn't bear to be with Moses because he had been so intimate with God that he had to take some time for the shine to go away. Moses spoke to God face to face. In the story that Eric read for us, it doesn't use the phrase face to face, but we have this encounter. Moses is there. Moses sees the fire, and he's drawn into it. God speaks through the fire. Now, Moses is in some ways ahead of the game, because he recognizes something special, something even divine in this place before God even speaks, and he's approaching it. So God sees Moses is approaching the flame, and God speaks to Moses. Now, some of us, in our faith walk, in our crisis, we're sort of waiting for this kind of moment of clarity. Right? What should I do? How can I overcome these problems? How do I know that God is with me? If only I could have a burning bush experience, then it would all be easier. But Moses has a burning bush experience, and he still wrestles. He's still fighting with this, because he doesn't think he's the right person. Now, you might know the story of Moses. His identity is sort of in question. Is he an Israelite, or is he an Egyptian? He has Israelite blood, and he's raised in an Egyptian family. Is he accepted by the Israelites? No, because he sort of put himself above them by carrying his royal identity. And he accepted by the Egyptians? No, because he killed one of the slave workers, or the slave masters, and so that's why he had to flee. So Moses knows he's carrying all this baggage with him, and he explains to God, who am I? Who am I to go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites to Egypt? It's not me. I can't do this. So even in this close, intimate encounter, it is clear that Moses wrestles with it. Now, we can imagine all of the other times Moses could have gone into the tent, gone up the mountain, received the words of God, and left. God has said what he needed to say. That's done. I'll bring it back. But he stayed for a long time, partly because Moses wrestled with what God was saying. Wrestling with God is not something to be ashamed of. It's not something that makes us weaker Christians. Wrestling with God puts us in a more intimate relationship with God than if we simply walk in blind faith. If we go back to the passage from 1 Corinthians 13, these three things are best expressed face to face: faith, hope, and love. Within a friendship, when you have faith in somebody, when you have hope in them, when you have love for them, you express that in a face-to-face relationship far better than you do in distance. And so in your face-to-face relationships, you can show these things. But I think you can show these things in your face-to-face wrestlings as well. If you go back a few verses, a few of you will have committed all of this to memory in such a beautiful chapter. Paul is writing about a sort of paradigm. He's kind of got two things that are different. And so he talks, when he was a child, he acted like a child, thought like a child, behaved like a child. And now that he's a man, he has put those childish things behind him. And so, looking at our own lives, we must wonder, what are those parallels? What are the childish things that we should be putting behind us? Well, and for some of us men, wrestling is a childish thing that we have to put behind us. And our bodies are happy we do that sometimes. And all of our childish pursuits, all of the childish questions that we have, we put those behind us. But in terms of a faith relationship, I'm not entirely sure that this is what Paul is saying. For now, we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Now, when you look in a mirror, it's a pretty high-quality mirror in comparison to what Paul was talking about. But still, every now and then, you will look in a mirror, and your image will be blurred. Maybe it's after a shower, and there's steam on the mirror. Maybe somebody has put their fingers on the mirror, and there's smudges. Maybe just because it's in the bath, and there's other stuff on the mirror. And so, what do you do? Well, I guess I've sort of got a good enough idea what I look like. No, you clear it out. You do the best you can to see the fullest image so that you are prepared for the world. We see imperfectly now. That doesn't mean that we accept the imperfection with which we see. We strive, we fight, we wrestle to see better. We wrestle to understand better. So now I know in part, as Paul says. I sort of know. I sort of know what I look like when I look in this mirror. But then when the relationship is fulfilled, then when I enter into connection, into communion with Jesus, then I will know fully. Until then, we work it out. Until then, we strive to know Jesus better. Not because things are hidden from us intentionally, but because in the striving that we are honest, then what it is that we are wanting, what it is we are striving for, becomes obvious. And when it becomes obvious what we want, then Jesus can partner with us to help us achieve that. And so this is my challenge to you. Don't be afraid to wrestle Don't be afraid to struggle to clear off the mirror to get a better image of what you're looking at. Don't be afraid and hide your struggles and hide your questions and hide your yearnings. Because in the intimacy of a wrestling match with God, you will be drawn closer to Him and He will help you to understand the things that you need to know.